Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore positively into a week of baseball, week of mini camp. Luke is out in Owings Mills all week long, sort of half of a week long. Kind of surprising that Harbaugh doesn't run these guys ragged this time of year. But you will hear from Lamar Jackson. All of that can be found out at Baltimore Positive. I can be found at the Y, at the pool, at the Y, and just in time for it to become 100 degrees. We're going to be out of Randallstown this week, chatting with John Hoey from the Y, Barry Williams, Councilman Julian Jones, who's running for Baltimore County Executive, and my crab cake provided by our good friends at Clean Cuisine of Owings Mills. Jerry Schlichting's going to come out, and we're going to talk about award-winning squash lasagna and all that stuff. Speaking of award-winning, I'm doing my 27 favorite things to eat in the area. It is our 27th anniversary in August. All of that is brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Curio Wellness as well as Liberty Pure Solutions. I'm excited about that. As I'm going to tell Jerry out at the pool at the Y this week, Clean Cuisine's probably going to be on that list at this point. And have a whole bunch of other great things that are going on. We're going to be out at Costas and Timonium, where I watched the game on Monday night, which is now open. Costas and Timonium. Don't go for crabs. They don't have any crabs there, but they have everything else. Just no crabs at Costas and Timonium, right in the racetrack. This guy here's no stranger to the racetrack, no stranger to Baltimore. He lives in Tampa. He has worked in Tampa for 3 decades as a sports writer there. I will let him give the background. He's an author on a Tom Matty book. You may have heard his voice here the last couple of weeks. I did a Father's Day turn in Oriole baseball. He's sort of an Oriole nerd stuck in Florida, like all of us trapped in our adolescence of Brooks and Boog and Eddie and Cal and all of that good stuff. But I thought it was a good time to bring Joel Poily back onto the program, even though it's been a couple of weeks. A lot of times I let guests give him fresh air for 3 months, 6 months, a year, leave him alone forever. Joel likes coming on. And you know what? I really, Joel, last time I had you on, I was driving out on the beltway, and I listened to the station just to hear how the interview sound and the audio and whatnot. And I heard your voice, and it's such a Baltimore voice. And I thought, that's what should be on my radio station, Baltimore voices. So it's good to have you back on. I hope you had a good Father's Day. And we talked about Tom Matty's birthdays this month as well, so we can
Right.
do a little Tom Matty. But I see the Orioles playing in the minor league park down there. I've been coming down there forever. You and I have engaged about a bunch of different things between Tom Matty and Baltimore sports, and you have this encyclopedic knowledge of from the Jim Henneman funeral a couple of weeks ago, and you send me notes once and again. But you're down there in the middle of this Tampa baseball thing, and you're not just a goof down there doing it. I mean, you're like, but a sports writer, you were, like you're in on the inside of all of this and covering the Rays, and you know Rick Vaughn better than I know Rick Vaughn. I find it very, very curious at this point how in the balance it must be for the Rays and the franchise, because it's not a good look. It's not a good time. Tickets are $15 for the game. And I'm
Right.
thinking, like, I mean, Luke's like, well, they're kind of dead in the water down there, aren't they? And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't know. I don't know. Does it feel like the Rays are leaving Tampa, Joel Poily?
First off, how you doing? Glad to be back. Thanks for having me on. I don't think they're dead in the water, but there's just a lot going on behind the scenes. 6 months ago, the deal fell through that they had for the stadium in St. Pete, which was going to be right next to the Trop. The funding for that fell through. They have started repairs on the Trop, so they think it'll be ready for the beginning of next season, but
So the
there's
plan is to play there next year. Well, let's get this
right.
straight. I want to make sure I'm getting soup from nuts here because I didn't have the sound up at the beginning of the game. I don't know what I mean. I was at Costas the other, like again. I don't know
Right.
what they've talked about. I haven't even done all the research on this. I was hoping to have you, maybe Rick Vaughn. I was trying to chase
Right.
Pete Williams. I'm sure you know Pete as well.
Sure.
About it, because I've been coming down to Tampa before they had the team. I was down there. I was telling Luke, I ran around that dome when they had a Sweet 16 pairing there, Kentucky, Duke, Marquette, somebody else. I don't know who it was. But I
Right.
went to those games with Mike Messina and the late, great Todd Froworth and Mark Williamson because the Orioles were training down there at Al Lang Stadium, and they were practicing up the at Huggins Stengel under the water tower. Great fish sandwiches at the joint out on the avenue there.
Right.
I remember doing this in 1993 when I'm a kid on the radio. Now,
Yeah.
32 years ago, right? That they didn't have a team, then they got a team. And I thought, what's this going to work down here? Air conditioned baseball, it's on the edge of the freeway. Nobody in Tampa ever wants to go to San. I didn't realize how it's kind of like Baltimore, Washington, but not so much. But I haven't understood that. You moved into it, right? What did you find when you were you down there before the team was there?
I got here in 86. So that was
Way
12 years.
before the team got
Yeah,
there.
I was 12 years before the team got here. But I was here for all the near misses. I mean, the dome opened, the Thunderdome, or whatever they called it back then, in 88. And it was always used as a wedge for all these other teams that wanted new stadiums. Remember, we thought we were getting the White Sox at one point. This was all between 88 and 98. The Giants, we thought, were a done deal. When I was working at the Tampa Tribune, we had a whole big section ready. Barry Bonds is coming, the Twins. So we were always that wedge until we got a team, but it took 10 years. The television market here is great. I mean, people watch the team, but you're right. There's this disconnect as the owner, Stu Sternberg, always says. People just don't, the water is a great divide. They don't want to go across the Howard Franklin from Tampa to St. Pete. But, just in the overall, but what's been interesting about them playing in Tampa so far this year is that people were seeing how much Tampa really loves the team, the game, the sport. And now, the Tampa mayor and one of the county commissioners, Ken Hagan, who's been very big in trying to get the team over here or trying to get that deal. Remember, you probably know this. They also had a
Well,
deal.
educate the audience here because even
That's what
if
I'm
I
doing.
know it, I might even know it wrong, which is why I'm kind of like giving you the floor on this because we're watching them play in this minor league stadium. The lighting's minor league, just like, and it's the second time in 2 weeks because we just did this out in Sacramento, right?
I
So,
know.
and they don't even have their act together. And Lord knows the Oakland thing was awful. I just. It doesn't reflect well upon the sport all these years into this, where there's billions of dollars in all of this. And here, they just gifted the franchises $600 million to basically throw the media out of the press boxes and use that area as, an airline skyliner, a lounge. You know what I mean? And I don't. Financially, they think that there's money for this and there's businesses for this and all of this. And I keep. They don't do much that's friendly for the fans. And in a place like Tampa where they're trying to keep the team, I'm wondering what you see because you've seen the same thing. I've seen the same thing. Joel, I've known Rick forever. Rick Vaughn, I mean, he left here, went down there, tried to make it work. He'd be the first one to say it's really hard to make it work. It's really hard to have Brooks and Boog and Earl Weaver and Jim Palmer. And it's hard to create that from nothing. And yet in your market, the hockey team has stolen the day and has become Tampa's team. The team that everybody identifies with is the hockey team.
Well, you always talk so much about ownership. And the first owner here that helped bring the team here, Vince Namoli, was just the wrong guy at the wrong time. I mean, we were all grateful that we got a team, but he was belligerent. He was not fan friendly. He was not business friendly. And that turned a lot of people off. When Stu Sternberg took over the team, I think in maybe 06, and then Joe Madden got here, things began to turn. They did more to upgrade the Trop to make it more fan friendly. I mean, these are types of things Namoli did. They'd have a 2-week homestand nest. He wouldn't. To save money, he wouldn't clean between games. And you know how it gets sticky on the floor and the seats. I mean, he was a terrible owner. I mean, yes,
I met him once. I'll tell a fun story about him
what'd
because
you think?
Bob Leffler worked for him, and Bob worked for the Colts and Ursa, just and Art Modell, and love Bob and the racetrack amongst other things. Local advertising, a guy Robert Leffler. You can Google him, the Leffler Agency. He worked for Namoli because he was like a hot shot, like. Loeffler was getting gigs with Rutgers and schools and doing marketing programs for Kansas State and different places. And I knew
Right.
Bob well. And so,
Right.
he would all talk about in the Moly. And I believe he also worked for the Glazers,
A
and
little bit,
trying to
yeah.
bring the team to Baltimore and like back with Boogie Wineglass and get Baltimore the ball and all that stuff. So
Right.
Loeffler worked for him, his late 90s teams in business. And I want to say this was 2001, 2003. It was in that range. It was before I knew my wife, which was three. So it's in that range. I got on a flight from Baltimore to Tampa. I think I was dating a girl down there. So it may have been 01. It was after the Super Bowl. So I was just flying down to Tampa
Right.
for something. And I get on a plane and there's a dude. It's Southwest Airlines. So it's free for all. This is Southwest before I think they, this is when they gave you the cards. It said A, B, and C. They gave you little plastic blue cards, or they had, it was 100 different colors you got. Yeah, it was
I
like,
remember
you
that.
remember that? They were
Yeah.
little, yeah. And they had numbers on them, A21, whatever you lined up, right?
Right.
Now, I don't think you lined up, but I just think you had an A and it was a crash, right? So after this crash, I get on the plane and I'm in the middle of the plane and I look over and there's a dude who's putting a bag up onto the up above. And I look on the bag and it had a Tampa Bay Devil Rays logo on it. And it
Yeah.
was like a giveaway bag. It was like said Albertsons on it or something. You know what I mean? It was like it was a little plastic bag.
Right.
And the guy had two women with him who were twins. So I wind up sitting next to him and his wife and one of the twins. They were was behind us or next to me or whatever, had their own seats or whatever. And they were a little bit like Zsa Zsa and Eva Gabor, you know what I mean? Like a little, these were people, but this guy was a little rough and tumble. And I said,
Yeah.
"Oh, Devil Rays, that's a cool bag.
Right.
Hey, yeah, I own them." Excuse me? He said, "It's the Moily. Nice to meet you. You a baseball fan?" And he kind of had this whole, that's exactly, I mean, I'm 25 years gone. You don't forget this.
Yeah.
And he said to me, "Yeah, I own the team. Fitz the Moily." And I'm nationally syndicated then, right? So like I knew who Vince the Moily was. And I looked at the bag and I'm like, "Really? Talk to you." I said, "I know Rick Vaughn. Oh, you know Rick, do you? All right, what's your name? Aparicio. I saw your cousin play. Yeah." He was like a loud, brash New Yorker kind of guy, right?
Right,
Yeah,
exactly.
yeah. And so and I've never really asked Rick to give me the horror stories, the ones that would be in the book that you couldn't publish. But
Right.
like that guy banned the USA Today. Pete Williams will probably give me the story. They wrote an anti him story, so he took like all like I just remember him doing these crazy, crazy things. But I met him and flew 2 hours on a plane with him talking baseball with him, and he was
Right.
certifiable, no question about it. N nuts.
Yeah, and he was that way in the community here, and that initially turned a lot of people off. Just getting back to the way things are now, I mean, the hurricane skewed everything, right? So they would still be in the trop. They would still be trying to negotiate a deal, but it's too late for 2028. That's when they wanted to open the stadium. They wanted to break ground in April.
Well, you said funding fell through in St. Pete. What happened there?
All right, I
And that's the
made.
closest it's ever come, right? There was a dream of a downtown Tampa park and all of that stuff. Like that was 15 years ago, man, right?
Yeah, like 6 months ago, the Pinellas County leaders, people from St. Pete and the Rays broke off talks. The Pinellas County leaders decided to delay the financing, and then the Rays decided at that point it was just too late to get involved, so they took their money out, and now they're just trying to get back over there. And it's a one-year solution. There's a lot, I think I told you the other week when I was on, there's a lot of talk that Sternberg is looking to sell. There's a group here with the DeBartolos, the guy, the family that used to own the 49ers. It's him and Joe Molloy, used to be part of the Yankees
I
ownership
think they owned
group.
the Penguins at one point too, a million years ago
They
too.
did. They
Yeah.
did. So there's talk because the DeBartolos are very locally invested here. And then there's also a group in Orlando that's talked about moving the team there. So it is very much up in the air. I mean, it's not the Rays' fault what happened, but it's just a cluster, man. I mean, I was listening to some things yesterday, making some notes. They have a $2 million allowance allotted for daily water removal from the Trop as they're trying to fix it up because it's already rainy season down here. The race schedule has been front loaded for all these home games in April, May, and June because the rainy season gets worse in August and September. So like the O's are going to be back here like in 3 weeks, I think, in early July. And then the second half of the schedule, the Rays are going to be on the road most of the time. I mean, they've done what they could with the park. I mean, it has a Rays feel, all the banners and the bunting. They've covered up everything Yankees.
Did you ever go there for baseball? Do you go there to see minor league games or spring training games, Yankee games? I feel like I've been in that stadium one time, and it was a long, long time ago for a spring training, something, something. I do. I don't. It's so vague to me. I don't really remember it. But I mean, I see it all the time because when I go down to football games or hockey games, or I'm just in Tampa, it's on the Dale Mabry. It's sitting there. It seems to me that this is Tampa's big chance to say we really want the team. Let's figure this out. But get this clear. Because we just piss money into the wind around here to these billionaire owners. We do. 30 years ago, I stood on that side of it until they started throwing journalists out and out of town ownership and Justin Tucker. I'm still waiting on that invest. Just on and on and on and on and on. The sleaze of the billionaire set that winds up with these teams that becomes the sleaze that runs the country, which is another story unto itself. But speaking of sleaze, Florida governors, they're not giving any money to this, right? Like, there's no money in Florida. Here in Maryland, this is one of the reasons money bags love this Orioles as a financial transaction. He's getting $600 million to fix up the house for walking into the house. That's not normal. I mean, in for the Rays, that's not, especially after they bilked Major League Baseball, bilked Miami and Broward County and everybody over on the other side of the state, that it's the Miami Marlins and the Florida Marlins have been an absolute, you mentioned cluster. They've been a real disaster for that area in regard to getting that stadium built that no one wanted, a place that no one wanted to, like, just Miami baseball is horrific. But the Tampa thing is, I feel more salvageable to me, even though the Miami thing feels sunk. Like, they're there, they're not moving, nobody goes, nobody cares, nobody knows. I feel like the Tampa thing's a little bit more worth a discussion as they're playing in this minor league park, but I don't see any Nashville's coming to steal them either. I don't see them move Montreal. Like, they don't. Who wants them? That's the question. Nobody wanted Oakland. They've been sitting there forever. Nobody wants them now.
Yeah, I mean, that helps the Rays situation here, but you're right. The state, as you remember, gave a lot of money for the stadium in Miami, and that's been a mess. And they're really not a great franchise. I mean, the fans here have definitely gotten behind this team, and the Trop was just the place that a lot of people didn't like to go to. I mean, they've sold out every game. Well, 11,000, but they're selling out every game at Steinbrenner. The fan experience isn't bad. I mean, I'm actually going tonight, but it's a good stadium, and the Yankees have kept it upgraded through the years. I've been there a lot, either watching games as a reporter. I was there about 3 months ago. My daughter got in the lottery for the Savannah Bananas, and
Oh, here we go. Go ahead.
no, it was a great experience,
I'm
man.
at, well, here's why. Here we go. Luke and I got into it about the bananas. And
Really?
we got into it about the bananas because I'm like, there, people are in line to get these. They play here 2 days on August 1st, 2nd, whatever. I don't know when it is. I don't know much about them other than like, it's the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. It's goofy. It's fan friendly. But here's what I know about it. It's really popular. And people are willing to stand in line, pay $200 to get in, and they're not willing to do that for Shohei Ohtani. I find that to be very strange.
I kind of thought the same thing while I was there because I have two daughters and my wife, and they're not super big sports fans, but they enjoyed the heck out of the bananas. And It's very fan friendly, kid friendly, and they are.
What did
They're
they enjoy about it?
well, they're like you were saying, they're the Globies of baseball. Good looking guys who take off their shirts. There's music, a lot of theatrics. It's also limited. It's 2 hours max, so it's not long, so you're not there too long. So they've worked that out.
They don't play 9 innings.
They do. They just kind of rush everything up. It's a
I
real
would
baseball
recognize it as
game.
baseball.
It's like the Bananas are playing the Washington Generals. You know what I mean?
See, I know nothing about it, and if
It's
somebody
fun.
invited me, I don't know what I would do with it. If somebody invite and if I go down there, I'm not even pissing on it, Joel. By the way, Joel Poitley is here, author, journalist, my dude in Tampa, Baltimore guy, but lives down in the sunshine, which sucks for you this week because it's going to be 100 here. We get a little taste of what it's like for you watching them wilt and everybody talk about how hot it is and all that outside and baseball and all that. But the bananas thing, they're playing here. And Luke and I got into it, and it's $200, and everybody's waiting in line for tickets, and everybody's into it. And I keep thinking to myself, all right, how do they get them to do that for Adley Rutschman and for Gunnar Henderson? Because that's the magic trick for Katie Griggs is getting people. And look, the bananas thing, it's a gateway to baseball. People like baseball. But then you say, well, this isn't as much fun. Organized baseball is not as much fun. 9 innings of a pennant race is as much fun. Major league pitching isn't as much fun. Like, I don't know. They've got a long way to go to sell people who aren't our age on this. And in Tampa, it always felt to me from the time I went down there, look, man, they were training at Huggins Stengel in 1993. I'm down there with Brady Anderson, Mike Mussina, Sid Fernandez, Jamie Moyer's trying to make his way into the big leagues, back into the big leagues. Like, I remember that little clubhouse down there, Huggins Stengel, like Casey Stengel. It's in St. Pete,
I've been
and
there.
they played at Al Lang, and they didn't even have a locker room there. The Cardinals wouldn't let him use it. They had to get dressed. They wore their clothes. The Orioles would get their clothes on and board the bus with their uniforms on, drive a mile and a half and get off the bus and walk into the stadium onto the field. It was like a little league. They had their bats and balls. And so I remember all of this from back in the day. And I always thought, like, kids play ball here. It's hot here. And I know football's a thing in Florida. I get it. But they always had the Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, Fred McGriff, Wade Boggs.
Sheffield,
Yeah, I mean, all those guys were Tampa guys, right? Like, why hasn't it worked better there in a way that it's a reputable franchise and that they can't get a stadium done 35 years later that suits the community?
Well, to back up a minute about the Bananas. They're coming back here. Well, no, they came back like 3 weeks later. They sold out Ray J at 68,000. It's just a fun experience.
They
As
sold
far
68,000 tickets.
sold out the same day.
This is what I'm talking about, and they can't give the Rays away next door. Like I, that's what I don't, I can't. I'm trying to connect that why Shohei Ohtani wouldn't be more popular than that. I don't, or more have more value because it wasn't just 68,000 and $5 a throw. People are paying like Madonna prices, Taylor Swift. You know what I mean? Like real money for this. I like the Globetrotters, but my dad didn't see it as a $100 ticket. It was if the Bullets were $8, they was $8. You know what I mean? It's what it was.
I think a lot of it is just that the players have become so distant. And even the media access, as you well know, even I've had it as a freelancer. I tried to get an interview with Adley Rutschman last year for a kids magazine when the Orioles were down here at the Trop. I wanted 5 minutes. The O's wouldn't give me 5 minutes for a kids magazine. They don't do anything to put the game out in front of kids. I mean, I know they have baseball in the inner cities. I know players do appearances, but they are just not as accessible. And I've noticed that too, that you just can't get close to these guys. I mean, and a lot of it's the money. They're behind an iron gate all the time, literally, where they live, where they play. Some guys will sign autographs, some won't. I think it's baseball wide, Ness, like you're saying. I mean, Ohtani and Trout in his heyday, and yet, you know, Trout didn't attract many people when he would come down here to play. I think this is a good baseball area. Rick can tell you that, you know, better than anybody.
Well, he's written books on the history of the area, right? Yeah.
Well, spring training, yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember, like you were saying, when the O's were nomads, you know, when they were trying to get out of Lauderdale and come over here. And you're right, they were like between three different places for the 6 weeks they were here. But as far as the Rays,
they trained at Twin Lakes Park in Sarasota after the strike in 95. I remember being there with Kevin Brown. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were all over.
That's before they got to Lauderdale.
Exactly, exactly. But no, this area loves baseball. They do. They're good fans. They're knowledgeable fans. They've taken to the team. You know, I think that the best years were when Madden was here, but, you know, they've done well under Cash.
But it's in peril, right? It is in peril, right?
Well, yeah, funding is now, too. Like I'm saying, Tampa mayor came out a couple weeks ago, you know, seeing the enthusiasm for the games and the team over here, that they thought they had a deal before the one in St. Pete came about, you know, like in November of last year, well, actually last summer, that they were trying to bring them over here down there, Ybor City, which is near Amalie Arena, you know, for people up there. It's the South Tampa area. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, that area it gets alive for hockey games and for Bruce Springsteen concerts and Eagles concerts and for Super Bowls. And I mean, the downtown Tampa area, there's space there that doesn't exist like at Camden Yards for them to build on the footprint or whatever. In Tampa, they could do kind of whatever they wanted. The thing that I'm quizzical about is because what happened in Atlanta where the mayor got sort of railroaded of Atlanta when they just said, we're moving the team to the county.
Right.
What's the competitive nature of the counties and are these county bonds? That, I mean, like, it's a lot of money to be thinking about $2 billion stadia with roofs on it that won't hold Super Bowls and any, you know, and they have a football stadium there that can get Super Bowls still, but is going to be way out of favor now that the league has a flagship in LA and are building other flagships in other places, despite the weather. I look at it and say, what's the perfect scenario for the Rays to remain there from somebody like you, who's been there for 40 years?
Every one of these scenarios ends up the same way. Each county, whether it's Pinellas County over in St. Pete or Hillsborough County here in Tampa, will put up a certain amount of money, but they want the Rays to put up more than the Rays are willing to put up. And that's always where they hit a wall. And that's why they're at an impasse. So it's in peril.
Well, it's terrible math for regular people to build stadiums, right? They've sold this ish to us for all these years and what it does for the community and blah, 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 blah. I know what it did for my property value. Nothing over 30, especially poor ownership. Angelo's cost me a fortune by wrecking the city on summer nights and making the Orioles not what the Bananas are. Something that people line up and want to come see what Cal Ripken used to be, right? Like an attraction, a thing. And winning is an attraction. And history is an attraction for the Detroit Tigers or the St. Louis Cardinals or even the Chicago Cubs, a lovable loser or whatever.
Right.
The Rays never had any of that. You know what I mean? The Rays had to go build something in the way that, like, look at what the Rockies are now. Look at what the Marlins have already urinated upon them. I mean, the A's. There are these franchises that have not gotten up and crawled and walked. I mean, Diamondbacks, Twins. I mean, the Pirates are a joke, right? So they just have so many lesser lights. But at the lesser lights, they have teams like the Rays that don't even have a stadium or the A's that didn't even have a stadium.
Right.
And no Nashville, Portland, Birmingham, Buffalo, not Vancouver.
Charlotte.
Vegas. I mean, if anybody really wanted a baseball team and said for 81 nights a year, we can bring people, employment, the Battery, housing, mixed use, parking, other events, Bananas, concerts, Billy Joel, Paul McCartney, they're about to die, all of them. But
Right.
whatever those things are that make a stadium revenue oriented, I don't see any Tampa Sternberg, any of these people
Right.
that want to put real money up and see when
Yeah.
they cash it out, how they're going to pay Adley Rutschman $50 million or Gunnar Henderson and
Yeah.
still figure out how to make money doing this. Baseball's interesting to me, Joel, all the way around with the apps and the money and the television and the skyboxes and the empty seats and the empty seats and the empty seats
Right.
and the bananas being popular. And I
Right.
keep saying to myself, baseball's got to be drinking this money in. And how do they attract it? And I
Right.
don't know. In a place like Tampa, they never had it. And I'm
Right.
watching it on TV all week and saying, what's going to become of that? What's going to become of that?
Well, it kind of works to the Rays' advantage, like you were saying, that none of these other cities that we were hearing about, whether it was Portland, Charlotte, are out there pining for a team. So I think it buys some time for the county and city leaders to try and put some more deals together. But right now, I think it's more on the Rays and Sternberg. See, and that's the thing. I don't think Sternberg wants to put up any more than it might have been about 60%. And I think, like, I know in Tampa, they wanted him to pony up a bit more of the funding for the deal that they were trying to put together in Ybor. But like you also mentioned too, like when Cal was signing autographs when he was going through the streak, you just don't see that as much. I mean, did he save baseball between the strike in 94 and the, 95? I think he helped quite a bit, because the popularity was going down.
Well,
But
they're talking about a strike at the end of next year, Joel. You know that.
that's another thing. I think that has people like at a distance. Like,
Well, people our age know better.
do we really want to get involved with this when there's going to be a work stoppage? So it's all these confluence of events that are working against the Rays getting a new stadium. But again, the hurricane just threw a monkey wrench into everything. I mean, they would still be in the trop and there would be negotiations, probably more with the St. Pete deal. But now that they're playing over here, like I said, the Tampa mayor and this county councilmen are like trying to bring up the deal in Ybor again because they're saying, hey, people over here are showing interest. As you know, there's more businesses over here than St. Pete. They would draw better. We've talked about this. They would draw more from Lakeland, maybe a little bit from Orlando, but there's a bigger population density in Tampa. Look, I thought all along that the stadium should have been here. I wanted it out by the fairgrounds off of I-4, Interstate 4, because you've got land there. They could split the parking and some of the revenues with the Seminoles who own the Hard Rock out there.
If the state of Florida had any money at all, they'd expand four and at least not make it
Yeah.
like the put a train between Orlando and Tampa. I mean, it's insane
I
that
know.
is the busiest piece of road in the country. I mean, more than any other place, it's nasty there. But I think, hey,
Right.
open up to Orlando. Make you let the Orlando people come down for baseball.
Right.
But look, Baseball City didn't work in Haines City, right? Like halfway between either. So
No.
I don't know what the appetite is for baseball in Florida, which is just something that 30 years ago, you never could have convinced me of that when I went down there and
Right.
felt like there was a culture for baseball in South Florida because there were Latin people, because black
Right.
people played the sport, white people played the sport, all white people went down there and supported the sport. I saw it. Canadians would go down there. I'd go down to Dunedin on the west side and you would just see snowbirds.
Yeah.
But and spring training was well supported in Florida.
Right.
And I just thought, hey, man, putting a team in Tampa in my lifetime, it's got to work. And here we're teetering again, playing in a minor league park. And I'm thinking, if there's ever a time to get their act together, team's pretty good. I mean, we'll get to
Right.
that in a minute. Joel Poile is here. Tell him
Right.
about your Maddie book real quick. And then I want to talk a
Oh.
little current Orioles with you.
Okay. Well, book came out last August. Ness was good enough to have me on a couple weeks ago, and we pitched it as a great Father's Day gift. And thank you, because actually I sold some copies online.
Last Man Standing. That's the
Oh
name of the
yeah.
book. Yes.
Right. And it's about Tom's life and career and, you know, my relationship with him, but there's a lot of Baltimore connections, and people up there will enjoy it because it'll bring back some good memories, some not so fond memories. But I still read a lot of things online about Tom. You know, there are all these fan groups up there. So, yeah, the book's been selling well.
Well, now, buy the book. It may make you feel better on a trip to Ocean City, and I'll be down in Ocean City for Mako in August, than watching the current state of the Orioles. You're in it. You're going to the games this week. The team's in Tampa down playing in the little stadium we've been talking about here for a half an hour. Joel, you're a lifer Oriole guy. You're a historian about the team and all of that. That, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about it teetering, and they started to play better baseball in Mansellino and wherever they are, and the Eflin thing on Monday aside. They have no rope here, and especially this week against the Rays and the Yankees this weekend. It's going to be 100 degrees when they get home against the Rangers next week here too. They need to make up ground in a way that the young players and the young hitters – And what the organization over the next 6 weeks before the trading deadline, this is a pretty tender little period. It's an interesting period, even if they're going to finish in last place and stink, as to what they're going to become and which direction they're going to go in from a trading standpoint, and which direction the new owner is going to go in, just in regard to what his leadership is going to look like. Is he to hire Mike Elias?
And, you know, it's strange to say that a 7-game road trip the third week of June is, you know, so important. But if they don't at least go 4-3 and kind of keep the train moving a little bit, they go 2-5, 1-6 this week. I think a lot of people probably throw in the towel. Now, it doesn't mean the season's over, but
Throwing in the towel changes the whole dynamic of the trading deadline for them.
No question.
So you know, it changes the trajectory of the franchise in a lot of ways and what their decision-making will be.
Last night was one game, but I noticed some things that when they lose, they play like a last place team. You know what I mean? And when they're, which probably is obvious, but when they win, they can put it all together. But like certain things I saw last night, and you know I love when teams play small ball. So you saw when the Rays bunted in the second inning last night, which the Orioles had no defensive answer for. I think it was Caminero. He steps out of the box before that pitch. He stares intently at the third base coach. You know me. I'm always going to go back to the old days. But what would happen when you and I were watching the Orioles in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, Brooks or maybe even Etchebarren would have alerted the infield, there's probably going to be some type of play on, and it's probably going to be a bunt. And you saw what happened. I mean, the best we can do is Eflin diving to stop the ball. Urias did not break in for the bunt. Brooks would have come in for that bunt.
Know the guys are ready for the bunt because it never happens, right?
Well, yeah, and that goes back to the fact that when a team plays small ball, it's like, wow, you know, what an innovative thing. So they didn't look good last night. I know right away when Eflin, like, flailed that pitch to the backstop, everyone, oh no, he blew out his elbow. You could tell it was just sweat on his hand because he kept wiping it off all night. He didn't have it, but it's one game. He's still our ace. I still like him, and I hope they re-sign him. I read a couple things. It might have been from Jim Bowden, you know, on MLB.com, that, well, the Orioles should trade Eflin and Sugano. I mean, then you have nothing. Then you're waiting on three injury-prone pitchers to be your staff the rest of the year. I mean, I would still sign Eflin to a 2- or 3-year deal. Sugano, maybe 1 or 2, and try and keep this thing going. But, yeah, this is a critical week because they need to show some fight. But let's look at it. It was one game. And the Rays are good. That's the other thing, too. They have a lot of no-name players that maybe – people up there really don't identify with, but man, they can develop some pitchers. I mean, I've got some numbers here, and you know, I'm not a big analytics or numbers guy, but I mean, their pitchers are like, I think they're going deeper into games than any starting staff in the majors. Now, last year, they lost about three quarters of their staff to Tommy John. They had like what the Orioles are having this year. This year, every one of their five starters.
Yeah, since the last time you and I got together, Corbin Burns went, right?
So. Right, right. Every one of the Rays starters this year has made their start. You can see, I mean, Pepio just blew them away last night. You couldn't look at his record because he got no run support until last night. They're going to face a couple other guys that can make them look silly if they don't adjust their thinking a little bit. So, there's one other stat here that was pretty interesting. Like, Rays starters have gone a minimum of five innings in almost 90% of their starts. So they keep them in the game. They have a knack for finding these cast-offs from other teams in the bullpen. Their bullpen is very sharp. They just swept the Mets three games over the weekend before this series. So they're to be taken seriously. And if we can get out of here with a split, I'd be satisfied. Now they need to take two out of three.
Joe Poile is here. He is a Tampa Bay-based sports writer, author, Oriole historian, still has his Baltimore Colts swag on the wall. Probably got some Clipper stuff laying around there if I had to look forward to you. What's your shirt? Is that an Oriole shirt?
Yeah, it's a Baltimore shirt.
Oh, it's the Baltimore. Thanks for the memories. Oh, okay, got Paul Blair on there. I see everybody up there. Last thing for you, I will share this because you're old school and I haven't shared it with anybody else this week. On Father's Day, Phil Jackman's daughters, not only did I have a crush on at least two-thirds of them, they're scattered around the world, and we lost Phil and we lost Tina last fall and within weeks of each other, people that were like parents to me, like, you know, Tina was my realtor, you know, so Michelle and I are close, and Michelle shared a picture of Earl Weaver and Phil Jackman. Joel, are you familiar with this photo by any stretch of the imagination, or are you not? Do you know the photo I'm talking about?
No. Do you have a shot of
it? I'm gonna pull it up. I'm gonna pull it up for you because I want to get the one that was shared by her because I don't want to. I found one on eBay that's autographed that I want the family to be able to buy. So I don't really want to share the link on that. So just give me one second to get this to where it needs to be, and then I'll pull it up for you. And here's the pic right here. If you're looking at online, this is Earl Weaver with a bottle of champagne about to dump it over the head of Phil Jackman in a locker room that's unidentifiable. Earl is in a visiting uniform.
I can tell you what locker room it is.
Go ahead.
RFK Stadium.
Washington. No, it's not RFK, actually.
It's not?
I looked it up. It's actually Fenway Park. They clinched 1970 there, and it was in the regular season, and it's a September, 18th picture. Okay. I found the actual identifier for all of it. But this picture got shared. And you know what the worst part? It's only the second best picture I've shared this month because the RFK Stadium, People's Drug, Louis Aparicio on the on-deck circle, and Jim Henneman as the bat boy.
The bat boy.
It's one thing to be – so you'll appreciate this too because you're an old school reader of the Evening Sun.
Yeah.
Jackman and Earl Weaver and Phil would regale me of stories of Earl, you know, being drunk at parties and this and that, and things that were said and you know, he and Earl were friend like Billick and I, you know, very, his daughter called it an unconventional relationship. So I guess I still have an unconventional relationship with Barry Trotz, who came on last week. I liked coaches like me. I'm not going to make any apology. By the way, I saw Jerry Nairn on the bench the other day for the Angels. And I'm like, with Ron Washington and I'm like, I know Jerry Nairn, you know, I knew him when he was coaching for Johnny Oates here. So I love coaches, love managers. But Earl and Phil had like a really special relationship, daughters, wives, everybody knew everybody and like all of that back in the day. So I don't know. I wish Phil were alive to tell me the whole story of the ship, but I never saw this picture before 48 hours ago. And now I want it for my wall in some way.
That's great.
But he called Earl in writing Spanky.
I know. I remember.
Spanky.
And you have to know somebody well to give them a nickname like that. Yes.
But Little Rascals, Spanky,
Yeah.
Earl Weaver. I mean, like, that's the best nickname I've ever heard for Earl Weaver.
Right. How much time do you have? I have one Weaver story.
I like two Weaver stories. I got coffee here from Zeke's. Go for it.
Okay. So I'm working for the Carroll County Times, and it's 1986. And I'm going down to the stadium to do a
Earl's the
feature.
manager again, right?
Right.
Earl's back. Okay.
I'm doing a feature on Floyd Sugar Bear Rayford, the hunt exaggeration, but the next third baseman who they were going to try and get to replace Doug DeSensei. And I'm talking to Earl, and it's like, I never like to be among the pack journalists because I don't want to get in their way. So Rick's the media relations guy, and he says, just stand to the side and I'll get you a couple minutes with Earl. So the pack breaks up, and it's like, I don't know, a half hour or so before the game, and I'm on the bench with Earl, and we're talking, and he's great. He's giving me all this great insight about how valuable Rayford is. It gets to be about 15 minutes before the game, and the umpires are motioning for Earl to come out with the lineup card. He whistles to Rip Senior, "Hey, take out the card." "Sure, no problem." We're talking, we're talking. Then I hear, it might have been Rex Barney, come over to PA system saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, would you please rise for the national?" I said, "Earl, don't I need to get out of here?" And he says, "Kid, before," meaning when he managed, before he retired, "I would have said, you got to go." He said, "Now, I don't give a shit. What do you need?" And we're sitting there, and I asked, he says, "Got any other questions?" And we're actually talking during the anthem. And then it's over. I walk down the runway, and I hear this whistle when I turn around. And he says, "Good luck, kid." It's like, that was my one Weaver story, but it was kind of
That's like a
cool.
Mean Joe Green story.
Sort of, kind of, yeah. I
Like a
don't,
Coke commercial.
yeah,
You know, I don't
except
I, you know, I was in the Oriole locker room in 1986 too. Reggie Jackson did not treat me like that. I promise you that. When I was with Bill
he didn't
Patterson.
treat a lot of us like
Yeah,
that.
I got some good stories from back in that day as well.
Although I did a story with Reggie during spring training down here years after he retired about the three home run game, and he was pretty gracious. We were just walking around, Legends Field as he's reminiscing, and he was pretty good then.
I wound up at breakfast with him and in Houston at the Super Bowl 2004. He was two tables away.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go up and say something, but I'm too much of a gentleman, you know,
Yeah.
it was a long time ago. But like when you get pushed around when you're a young reporter, you remember
Yeah.
that, especially when it's a legend doing it because he wants to do it and because he liked
Right.
to do it. Because all these years later, I've been treated so well by so many people, including Doug DeSantis. I'm gonna drop the mic on this one because you're an old schooler. Joel Poilievre is here. Go buy his Tom Matty book, Last Man Standing. He's a good man. He's down there in Tampa, Florida. Hold the book up, Joel. Say something about the book. Where
Soon.
can they buy it?
Amazon, Barnes and
Amazon.
Noble, Books a Million. It's out there on all the major retailers, and it's a good, quick, easy read. And if you love Colts history and you love Tom, you'll like the book.
Forward by Jack Nicklaus. I mean, you can't bet. Only Jack Nicholson. Well, maybe that might even be better for a sports book. I'm not sure. But Joel is down in
Try.
Tampa, Florida, doing his thing here. We're going to be out doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour and trying to have a little bit of fun out here. And we've been telling old baseball stories and stuff like that. Last night, I went to Costas in Timonium. Mixologist John mixed me up a delicious Deep Eddy Orange Crush. I had the salmon St. Michael. My wife's watching the game. We're having a bowl of crab soup and some seeing the for the first time. We're at the racetrack there. Ekman had been in that space. I heard his voice later. So I came home. I plopped down in a love sack, and the game's on. It's about the third inning. It's already 5-1 en route to 7-1.
Yeah.
And I plopped down. I look on my phone. And I got an email. I'm gonna read it to you because this is the best for me, okay? Because this will give you the era, and this will
Okay.
tell you a little bit about my wife too, because
All right.
and a little bit about my relationship with my wife, because I don't know that I had any conversation with this. Email comes in from a guy named that's a Chuck Thompson, from a fella named Fred Lynn. It says, "Hi, Nestor. I apologize for not getting back to you. Please reach out to my wife, Natalie. Here's her number. We'll set something up. Let's do it."
That's great.
Fred Lynn is going to
That's
be
great.
coming on the break. So I turn to my wife and I'm like a kid again, right? I mean, I turn to my wife. I'm dog ass tired. I was just tired, yoga, Planet Fitness, all the stuff I'm
Yeah.
doing. I'm doing a show at the Y. I turn her. I'm on my phone. I'm like, "Hey, Fred Lynn's doing a show." She's like, "I didn't know you liked Fred Lynn." And I'm like, "You know who Fred Lynn is?" She's like, "I'm a Red Sox fan. Of course I know who Fred Lynn is. I
Yeah.
just didn't know you liked Fred Lynn." I'm like, "Fred Lynn was like maybe my, like
Oh, he was great.
there's George Brett, Mike Schmidt. I had guys, Sixto Lescano. I had players I loved, Kiko Garcia. But like Fred Lynn's Fred Lynn. If he comes on the show, it's going to be a big deal, right?"
And when you talk to him, please have him explain to Couser how to approach a fly ball at the fence without killing yourself.
No, because he killed himself all the time.
Well,
So
he did, but he caught a lot of those nests. I mean, Cal, as a
he also
former
caught
out,
shoulder separations too, as I remember it.
I know, but I mean,
Probably
Couser,
cost him the Hall of Fame, probably.
oh, it did, because he was a great player. He really was. He just missed too much time. But man, watching Couser chase these balls near the wall, it's painful. He loses his hat, he loses his sunglasses, he loses his gloves, so he's never going to catch the ball. I mean, somebody's got to teach him how to approach the wall and feel the warning track under your feet. So Fred could still tell
Well,
him.
you're indicting the Orioles coaches now, which is fine. I mean, they're on their
I
second
am, man.
group. Yeah, I mean, it just is because we watch them play. Joel loves the Orioles. He loves the 1986 Orioles of Fred Lynn. Fred Lynn was in that locker room when you were talking to Spanky over there. Hey, kid. How'd the story turn out? Was it good, the story?
Oh yeah, it's out there
Still have the
somewhere.
clip? Okay, fine. That's
Yeah,
good.
no.
Earl Weaver talk. I knew it would always come back to that. Minor league stadiums, Major League Baseball. Oh, and NFL minicamp. Luke's out in Owings Mills. I'm taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. We will be at Reader's Crab House on the 26th. That's next week. First time out in Reisterstown. Not my first time in that space. I'm gonna have the story about Samari Roll being there the night that all the electricity went out in the whole plaza out in Reisterstown. So we will have full electricity at Reader's on the 26th. Maryland Lottery's giving me the Back to the Future scratch-offs to give away. We're also going to be at Costas and Timonium in early July. We're going to be at 1623 Brewing in Eldersburg. We're coming to DePasquale's in Canton. And we're also going to be at Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. So the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, it's getting out. It's getting about. It's getting loud. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, celebrating 27 years. We are Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.